Joining me now is Dr. Peter Vincent Pry. He was the chief of staff for the Congressional EMP Commission. He now heads up the EMP Commission. Dr. Pry, welcome back to the broadcast. Thank you for joining us.
Well, thank you for having me, Brian.
You've been a busy guy. You've been doing a ton of interviews, haven't you?
Yes.
Well, good. More people need to hear you, and I heard you on Michael Savage the other night. Here's an article. This is reporting that Sean Hannity said the other night, quote, if Vladimir Putin wanted to negotiate, he would have done it a long time ago, end quote. He said, quote, he's not willing to, and if he wants to use chemical, biological, or nuclear weapons, he's got to know that this entire country is going to get blown off, that his entire country is going to get blown off the face of the earth, end quote. And then, of course, we also see him now interviewing Sean Penn, who's an absolute radical. So I'm not sure what's going on over there, but he seems to be, like so many in the Republican Party, agitating for World War III. What do you make of Sean Hannity's comments, Dr. Pry?
Well, I have great respect for Sean Hannity, and I've been a guest on his show. I think Hannity is probably making an honest mistake, you know, because our government under the previous administration as well as this administration have not adequately explained to the American people the great disadvantages we face vis-a-vis Russia when it comes to weapons of mass destruction. You know, biological weapons. The United States honors its treaties, and we have disposed of our offensive biological weapons capability. We don't have one. Russia does. They cheated on that treaty. They've got offensive biological weapons, and we don't have them. The Chemical Weapons Convention, you know, the United States honored that. You know, we basically don't have an offensive chemical weapons capability. The residual capabilities we have in the chemical and biological warfare world are for defensive purposes, for toxins and vaccines against offensive capabilities. But we don't have the advanced biological and chemical capabilities that Russia has developed, you know, because we have obeyed those treaties and have not developed the kinds of aggressive, offensive kinds of bugs that Russia has in its stockpile. When it comes to nuclear, the situation is just as bad, if not worse. The United States nuclear deterrent is virtually obsolete. All of the nuclear delivery systems, the bombers, the missiles, the submarines, were inherited from the Reagan administration, you know, decades ago. They're not new modern systems the way the Russian systems are. The warheads carried on those delivery, on those vehicles are even older. And they haven't been tested in 30 years. We've been patching them up in this thing called the Stockpile Stewardship Program. And the laboratories, our nuclear labs, insist, oh, don't worry, the weapons will work. And they certify that to Congress every year. But then when people retire from the Stockpile Stewardship Program, they write articles saying, well, you know, we really don't know if they are going to work, you know, once they don't belong to the laboratories anymore. And the people that designed those nuclear weapons have been signing. One in particular I would mention is Vice Admiral Robert Monroe. You know, you ought to ask him on your show sometime. He was the director of the U.S. Defense Nuclear Agency before the Clinton administration ended it. But he was chiefly responsible, you know, for the surety of our nuclear weapons program. And he has written many articles in The Hill and elsewhere warning that our weapons, because they haven't been tested in 30 years, might not work, that their safety, security, and reliability is deeply in question. You know, we don't want to. All of this war fever over Ukraine is happening at a time when America is profoundly weak, frankly, in the weapons of mass destruction area. And if we, even if we prevailed over Russia at a conventional level, they would escalate. They would certainly escalate. They are prepared to fight and win a nuclear war. They've been preparing for it for years. Let me give you some other examples. You know, Russia has got 10,000 anti-ballistic missile and surface-to-air missile systems for intercepting ballistic missile warheads, cruise missiles, and bombers. 10,000 of them. We don't have anything like that. We've got 64 ground-based interceptors, 64 in the National Missile Defense, and they're not designed to attack, to intercept Chinese and Russian missiles. They're designed against North Korea and Iran. And they have a hard time with North Korea because the North Korean missiles are based on Russian and Chinese technology. The Russians have got hundreds of deep underground facilities. Just one of them, for example, like Kazvinsky Mountain, the General Staff Command Post in Urals, can accommodate 30,000 people. You know, collectively, their deep underground facilities can probably accommodate the top 300,000 political and military elites of Russia.
Wow.
And they have vast civil defense subway shelters, for example, equipped with blast doors, and shelters for their civilian population as well. They conducted a civil defense exercise back in 2016 that mobilized 40 million civilians to practice basically surviving a nuclear conflict in those shelters. We don't have anything like that, you know? And the Russians are way ahead of us in their nuclear weapons technology. They've been cheating on the comprehensive test ban treaty. The reason we haven't tested in 30 years is because we honor our treaties. Strangely, you know, we honor treaties even when our adversaries violate them. And the comprehensive test ban treaty is a case in point. Even though we know the Russians and Chinese are cheating on it, we continue to adhere to it. But they have got a 30-year lead over us in advanced nuclear weapons technology, you know, which means they have things like super EMP weapons. They could theoretically win a nuclear war with one blow, with one weapon detonated over our the United States, you know, that would fry the electronics in our bombers and our missiles, you know, in our command and control systems that we need to execute those forces. So this enthusiasm for going to war with Russia is a very dangerous thing. We need to remember the lesson that Ronald Reagan taught us about peace through strength. You know, our great advantage over our adversaries is that a free society is based on the fundamental truths that the founders understood about human nature. You know, that men want to be free, that there should be open debate. Now we have problems with that in our system. You know, some of these fundamental principles are starting to break down to our peril, because they are necessary not only for our freedom within our society, but they are necessary for our survival in competition with these totalitarian states. The thing that they do well, and the reason they seem always to be ahead of us when it comes to military power, is because that's where they put all their creativity and all of their resources, you know, into being able to win wars. You know, that is what they're good at. And the United States has other things to do with its resources, like building culture, like building a good life for its citizens, you know. And the great advantage we have is our freedom and the fact that our system is based on the truth. You know, that men are born free, that God wants them to be free, you know, that a system that is organized, that provides for the free exchange of ideas and for argument and debate and for coming up with the best solutions through compromise, that's a superior system to a totalitarian or tyrannical system, which is fundamentally based on lies. You know, the lie that men are better off, you know, being slaves, you know, to a master like Putin or Xi in China, you know, that men are better off sacrificing freedom for the false promise of security, you know, that the thing that matters most is might, military might. We will win, we can win the new Cold War by avoiding getting into a war and fighting on their terms. You know, they would welcome a military conflict, and they may force one upon us sooner or later.
Well, let me ask you about that. People look at what's happening in Ukraine and they think, well, right there is proving Russia's not as big and strong as we thought. You know, the news has been Russia's mired down. Russia's taken heavy losses. Russia's lost a bunch of its generals. Now their news today was showing a Ukrainian tank taking out several Russian tanks all by itself. I don't know what to believe anymore. I don't know what's true. Can you tell me what's true?
No, I can't. But I can tell you what's possibly true. You know, one thing that's possibly true is what you are seeing on television every night. It's possibly true that Putin miscalculated and that his military violated their own military doctrine and sacrificed the element of surprise. and hasn't brought its overwhelming force to bear, and it hasn't. You know, Russia's got 20,000 tanks. They've only unleashed a small fraction of them. The Air Force is practically not participating in the war, okay? All that's being held back for some reason. So it's possibly true that through mismanagement and bad generalship, the Russians are on the ropes. That's not good news for us. If the that's the worst news for us, unfortunately, and ironically, because if the Russians are on the ropes and if Putin is really in danger of falling from power, that means he's in danger of losing his life, and the elites who support him are in danger of losing theirs, and they're not going to let that happen. They will roll the nuclear dice if they have to in order to achieve victory, because they can't afford defeat. You know, it would mean their debt. So it's possible that what we're seeing is true, but I'm extremely skeptical that it is true, because almost everything that we're hearing is basically informed by Ukrainian propaganda and propaganda from a Biden administration that wants the Russians to look as bad as possible. You know, it's another possibility is this war is going just the way Putin wants it. Maybe he never intended to have a quick victory over Ukraine. Maybe he planned it to be, you know, we were all thinking that the Crimea scenario was the likely way this was going to unfold, that Russia would go in there, achieve an almost bloodless victory, and do it very quickly, with very little opposition. But there's another war that was going on, that's been going on for 8 years, in eastern Ukraine, you know, in Donetsk and Luhansk. For 8 years, Russia has deliberately been fighting a long, protracted, stalemate-type war to destabilize the Ukrainians, to put fear into the heart of NATO. Maybe that's what Putin wants, you know, because, you know, Russia benefits from chaos. You know, oil prices go up, arms sales increase, the West becomes afraid, because we always fear war, because we're not a tyranny, we're not a totalitarian state that likes war. You know, Russia needs wars and the threat of wars in order to justify the internal oppression of its people, you know, to tell them, you've got to make these sacrifices, you've got to follow my lead, because your lives are in danger from the West. You know, and that has always been the case with military dictatorships and totalitarian states. You know, war helps them. It helps them domestically, and it helps them in their foreign policy. So maybe Putin wants this thing to just go on and on. You know, that's one possibility. Another possibility, you know, is the Spanish Civil War scenario. You know, before Nazi Germany launched World War II, it tested out its weapons, its generals, it blooded its troops. You know, a veteran soldier who's been exposed to war, has the experience of war, is worth two or three times his number in terms of if he has to confront green troops, like those in European NATO, who have never been involved in serious war. And maybe that's what Putin is doing. You know, that he's using this, like the Nazis used the Spanish Civil War, to get rid of his bad generals, to, you know, get rid of the bad people within his intelligence apparatus, to hone the Russian blade to prepare for World War III, test out new tactics, find out what works, what doesn't, and get his troops blooded so that they become veteran soldiers and used to brutal combat. That's what Nazi Germany did in the Spanish Civil War, and they nearly defeated the Western democracies in World War II as a consequence. And another possibility, and you know, and I'm not saying any of these is the likely one, because I don't have a crystal ball. I don't know what the truth is, but I know that all of these scenarios I'm describing are at least equally plausible with the one scenario we're constantly hearing every day, which is, oh, Russia's on the ropes, losing the war, the water is fine, let's jump in and get involved in World War III against Russia and Ukraine.
Let me ask you about the World Economic Forum. Klaus Schwab and these guys are all predicting a cyber attack. They held their cyber polygon, some of the same people that predicted, you know, COVID, then it happened. You know, you get wonder how they do that, because you have to wonder, some of them had advanced knowledge, obviously, it was kind of helped along. So they run their exercises for cyber attack. Now Joe Biden's coming out saying, we're definitely going to have food shortages. Russia is imminent on their cyber attack. So I don't know what to believe, as, you know, there's so much propaganda lying and there's so much manufactured crisis. But I would like to ask you, how concerned are you for America in 2022 that we can get out of 2022 without going to full-fledged World War III? Although I think there are aspects of it where it's already started. I mean, when, as you said in my documentary Siege, when Russia and China are hacking on your power grid, that's an act of war. At least it should be considered as such. So in one sense, I think World War III has already begun. But when it fully goes hot, do you think we can get out of, what are the probability we get out of 2022 without that? And how concerned are you yet in 2022 about a cyber attack? I guess, in other words, in your home, in your house, you know, how concerned are you about being without power for days or weeks or months? Is it on a scale of 1 to 10? Are we at a 2? Are we at an 8 or a 9?
I'd say we're, you know, we're at a 9, possibly a 10.
Wow.
In terms of the danger of that happening. And in terms of are we in World War III? I don't think you have to wonder about a cyber attack to answer that question. You know, we have a major war in Europe going on. World War II started with an invasion of Poland. Geostrategically, Ukraine is actually more important on the European continent than Poland was in 1939. You know, it's a country the size of France. All kinds of pipelines go across it. If Russia takes over Ukraine, they will have an enormous common border with NATO again, the way they did during the Cold War, and they will be positioned to invade NATO if they want to, and unleash those 20,000 tanks and the vast military strength they haven't utilized yet. And in fact, I'm extremely worried about this great debate going on in the West right now among those who want us to get more involved in Ukraine and actually fight on the side of the Ukrainians, you know, so that NATO and the United States are directly killing Russians, which would mean a confrontation with Russia, which would mean a World War III. And one of these scenarios, another possibility that I didn't get a chance to mention, you know, is the Austerlitz scenario. I worry about that. It's almost like the Russians are behaving in such a provocative way that they want us to intervene in Ukraine. I call it the Austerlitz scenario after the Battle of Austerlitz, the 1805 battle that was Napoleon's greatest victory. He faced the combined forces of the greatest land powers of mainland Europe, the Russians, the Austrians. They had combined their armies and allied against Napoleon. They outnumbered him, but they were still cautious about attacking him because Napoleon had proven himself to be a military genius at that time. So they were nervous about challenging the French army that had been undefeated up at that point. But Napoleon deliberately occupied the poorest part of the battlefield. He sent defectors saying that the French army was deeply demoralized and overextended because they were far from France. They were in Central Europe. Their supply lines were overextended. Napoleon had regiments feign cowardice and retreat in the face of the Russians on the battlefield, all of this to lure them into attacking. And when they did, you know, he dropped the hammer on them and destroyed their armies. And that one battle gave him dominance of Europe and made him basically the master of Europe. I wonder if Russia is doing the same thing in Ukraine, and that their chief objective isn't just the conquest of Ukraine, but they want to, don't forget in World War II, they conquered the same terrain. They spent 30 million lives conquering this area, okay? You know, maybe they want to lure the United States and NATO. Maybe this is about finding a final solution to the problem of the United States and NATO, and they want us to go in there. It's the very end. It's the farthest reach for our power projection capabilities. If we got our guys in there, into Ukraine, it would be a deuce of a problem getting them out again. And if we got them in there, maybe then Russia would unleash its tenfold advantage in tactical nuclear weapons and basically use it to destroy our NATO and U.S. forces and, as I said, a final solution to the problems of the United States and NATO. So they could be that's how close we are to World War III. We are one bad decision away from a World War III, my friend, one bad decision away. And that decision would be for us to jump into NATO, to jump into Ukraine, as so many want us to do. And if it's going bad for, if it is going bad for the Russians, or they might decide to escalate it anyway, before they launched any kind of a nuclear attack against us, they would certainly do, I think, a combined cyber and EMP attack. That is the easiest way for them to prevail in a World War III. You know, we simply don't have comparable offensive cyber and EMP capabilities. It wouldn't be, as a Judeo-Christian civilization, it wouldn't be an ethically proportional response for us to respond with nuclear weapons to a cyber and EMP attack, you know, that paralyzed our electric grids and our critical infrastructures. We would basically be defeated at that at that point.
And our military bases rely on that civilian power.
90% of our military bases, 99% of their electric power comes from the civilian electric grid. You know, an EMP attack could fry the electronics and our missiles and command and control systems, as I had described earlier. So we wouldn't be able to retaliate if they did decide to escalate to the nuclear level.
By the way, you can get his book, Blackout Warfare, his new book, hardcover, beautiful book, at Amazon. Just type in Dr. Peter Vincent Pry. You can order Blackout Warfare, which goes into this. You'll find a lot of his books, too. He's written numerous books. All you got to do is just go to Amazon and type in Dr. Peter Vincent Pry, and all of his books will pop up. I mean, we've talked about Russia, we've talked about Ukraine. Let's make sure we hit on North Korea, China, and Iran before we run out of time. Tell me your thoughts about China moving against Iran. I had Colonel John Mills. I think you know Colonel John Mills from National Security, National Center for Security Policy. I think he was at an event in Florida with you not too long ago. He said on my radio show. But he says he will not be shocked if in the next 60, 90 days, China, he wouldn't be shocked at all if they make a move against Taiwan. What do you think?
I wouldn't be shocked either. I wouldn't be shocked if the Russians made a nuclear attack against us tomorrow. I mean, that's how grave the circumstance is. We've never had such an incompetent administration in power in Washington, you know, at the same time, and we've never been in a situation where the correlation of forces in terms of weapons of mass destruction, nuclear, chemical, biological, are all against us, with the adversary having overwhelming superiority. You know, Ronald Reagan won the Cold War because he ensured that that did not happen, and that we had a balance of power with the Soviet Union. We contained them long enough so that their internal contradictions, the lies that those systems are based on, caught up with them, and they self-destructed. That's the key to victory, to win without war. Reagan did that. That's the model we have to follow now. To go to North Korea and Iran and China, I mean, the West is proving once again that it can't walk and chew gum at the same time. It's so focused on Ukraine, and it's so already engaged in premature celebrations that, oh, Russia is going to lose in Ukraine, and Putin's going to fall from power, and this is going to be a great victory for the West, okay? That's what they think, you know. I'm afraid that that hope might be proved to be as elusive and untrue as our hope that we could turn Afghanistan into a feminist secular democracy. Everybody has forgotten, you know, they're talking about how badly Russia is doing against Ukrainians. Well, the Ukrainians are more formidable adversary than the Taliban, and the Taliban beat us. I would like people to remember that. You know, that was less than a year ago. But while they're focused on Ukraine, they're not paying attention to North Korea, you know, which has just tested the world's largest mobile ICBM. And it's probably going to be MIRV. That is, it'll have multiple warheads put on it, which will exponentially increase the North Korean nuclear threat to the U.S. homeland. That is a development that is more serious to the United States and more directly threatening to us than would be an invasion of South Korea by North Korea, this testing of this missile. But people, it's practically been ignored, this development. And it looks, by the way, the North Koreans are also at work refurbishing their nuclear test site. So they may well go back to testing nuclear weapons. So this is an enormously You know, once you've got nuclear weapons, it makes you a superpower. People don't like to admit it. They don't like to describe it that way because North Korea is such a failed state in every other respect. But once you get nuclear weapons and the ability to destroy the United States, that makes you a superpower. So we're looking at the rise of a new superpower that is that belongs to China and Russia. It's a client state of China and Russia, basically. You know, a third totalitarian superpower to oppose us. And we may be facing a fourth totalitarian superpower in Iran, you know, because the Iran nuclear deal, this new Iran nuclear deal, is going to give billions of dollars to the Iranians. It's going to betray Israel and the moderate Arab states, you know, by making Iran our main partner, the main focus of our attention and largesse in the Middle East, you know, at the expense of Israel's security, at the expense of the security of the moderate Arab states. The Biden administration has just rolled right over our allies, ignoring their pleas and protests to not cut another deal with Iran. You know, and all of it is probably an exercise in futility. As you know from past interviews, I and not a few others believe Iran already has the bomb.
Right.
So there's no point in having an Iran nuclear deal. You know, there's no worse deal than a deal that tries to stop a horse that's already out of the barn.
Right.
You know, Iran, unlike North Korea, has kept its program secret and probably already has at least the Shahab 3 armed with nuclear warheads. But if I'm wrong about that, even the optimists say Iran is only 8 weeks away from an atomic bomb. Okay, 8 weeks. For all practical purposes, that already makes Iran a de facto nuclear weapons state. So why in the world are we giving them billions of dollars in alienating our Israel and our Arab allies? In effect, we're rewarding them for becoming a fourth nuclear superpower that's vowed to destroy Israel and the United States. You know, we've never faced such a combination of powerful totalitarian adversaries in our history before, and we are now. What's happening on the ground in Ukraine is problematical. You know, we don't know who's winning, who's losing. My money is still on the Russians. You know, the Ukrainian army has benefited tremendously from General Mudd, you know, because it's been a warm winter in Ukraine, and that's impeded Russian armored operations. But the summer is here, the ground's going to dry. We'll see what happens. So it's problematical what's happening in Ukraine, that everybody is celebrating victory already. But what is not problematical is that we have suffered several huge blows and setbacks to our national security in North Korea, in Iran, and I didn't even mention China, you know, which has militarized some of the final islands out there in the South China Sea, completing its stranglehold on the South China Sea. So not only is it positioned, you know, to control that vital artery to world trade, but it's also positioned to project power all over the Pacific, just the way Japan was, you know, after Pearl Harbor and after its invasion of Southeast Asia. You know, it's in an equivalent position. It could actually attack Australia now from the South China Sea. You know, that's happened right under our noses. While everybody has been applauding Ukraine and thinking about jumping into the Ukraine war, all three of these other huge developments, setbacks to our national reversals in our foreign policy, these are huge defeats for the United States. We're the ones who are clearly suffering defeats when it comes to our national security in these areas. And why we should, it's hardly how anyone can be taking a celebratory attitude or an enthusiastic attitude when Russia is on the march, you know, this nuclear superpower that has in a much better position to win a nuclear war than we are. The fact that Russia is on the march, that's a terrifying thing. Yeah, you know, I'm losing sleep over that. You know, this is a situation that's more dangerous than the Cuban Missile Crisis was. Not least because the Biden administration won't admit it. You know, it's also unprecedented in our history that we've had an adversary who's so close to pushing the nuclear button. And I say that because Putin declared a special combat alert. He went down into his deep underground facilities with his general staff. He can launch those missiles in a few minutes, anytime he wants. But the Biden administration is telling the American people, oh, don't worry, be happy. He's just bluffing. It's just nuclear saber rattling. You know, nothing to worry about there. But contrary to what the Biden administration is saying, we know that Russia has a strategic command and control system. And because most of its missiles, you know, are ICBMs, most of the warheads are on ICBMs, which can be launched in a few minutes. They are always 95% of them are what's called constant combat readiness, 24/7 ready to go. The only thing comparable we've got are the 400 Minuteman ICBMs in our force, but that's only 400 warheads. You know, it's not the thousands of warheads that Russia has, you know, available to it on its forces. They could destroy our bombers before they on their bases because our bombers are not mobilized. Biden is keeping them at DEFCON 5, the lowest readiness level, which sets us up for a nuclear Pearl Harbor. The submarines are in their ports. There's only not a few submarines at sea on any basis. Most of them are in port. They would be destroyed in a surprise attack, and the Russians know that. You know, the only thing we've got are the 400 ICBMs every day, standing sentinel, you know, preventing, deterring the Russians. Hopefully that deterrence will hold, but it might not. You know, they have the ability to destroy those ICBMs too with their in a first strike. And ironically, the Biden administration, its kitchen cabinet of anti-nuclear activists, even now in the midst of this, are talking about banning our ICBMs and giving up our ICBMs. It's the only part of our force standing us between us and catastrophe right now. And they are living in a fantasy world, you know, and it makes it extremely dangerous that we've got such poor leadership in Washington
that
is so disconnected from reality. You know, Joe Biden is not JFK, you know. You know, he's a lot closer. You know, he's everybody can see that our president has got mental problems. And the people who are surrounding him, his advisors, are children. You know, they're not people who are deeply experienced in national security. They're highly ideological, they're woke types that have come out of the universities. You know, I've talked about Wendy Sherman as an example. Maybe I should talk about her again to remind your viewers about the low quality of person that we have. You know, she's supposed to be one of the deep thinkers in the Biden administration because she's the Deputy Secretary of State, and she's on point to help resolve the Ukrainian crisis. And who is she? You know, well, you know, she's not trained in international relations. You know, that's not what her background is. She was a social worker in Maryland, and she ran the Department of Child Welfare in Maryland. And her biggest claim to fame before she entered the State Department under the Clinton administration, you know, was that she was headed Emily's List, which was a group dedicated to getting women elected to office, Democrat women who support abortion. So her background has nothing to do with nuclear weapons.
So we put community organizers in at high levels of the State Department.
Right, exactly. And now she's the deputy secretary, the number two person, you know, in the State Department. Usually the number two person is supposed to be a permanent grown-up type that spent their whole life, you know, working in the national security.
Someone like yourself.
Well, you know,
yeah, someone with your bio, with your background, with your knowledge, or someone like John Mills or any of the other people we've interviewed, but someone who came literally out of Child Protection Services out of Maryland and worked their way up as a community organizer.
Somebody like Henrik or Wallstetter or Jim Schlesinger, you know, when you look at the kind of people who won the Cold War, you know, you look at people that with that kind of a background, you know, people who had deep experience of war and peace. You know, but certainly I would take myself as a Deputy Secretary of State, but I would take you over Wendy Sherman too, all right? You know, or almost any of your listeners. You know, she's got a terrible track record. You know, the Clintons put her into the State Department, and immediately she had this, her first defeat was North Korea. You know, she's one of the people that gave us the agreed framework with North Korea. Remember that? That was supposed to guarantee that North Korea wasn't going to become a nuclear weapons state. How did that work out?
Yeah, exactly.
And then Obama brought her back and she gave us the Obama Joint Comprehensive Plan of Action, the Iran deal with Obama. You know, now she's back with Biden and wants to give us another Iran deal, and even worse, you know, is one of those that's responsible for this war with Ukraine. The whole thing, it's possible the whole thing might have been avoided if they had seriously negotiated with Russia on the basis of the peace treaty they offered before they invaded. Most Americans don't even know that the Russians had offered a peace treaty, which contrary to the Biden administration was not unreasonable. There were a lot of things in that peace treaty that are just as much in the interests of the United States as they were in Russia. For example, the Russians wanted us to promise that Ukraine would not become a member of NATO and that we wouldn't expand NATO further to the east. Well, I'm all for that. You know, Ukraine shouldn't have been, we should never have even let Ukraine become a Partnership for Peace member, let alone...
Which is the step headed that direction, which is partly what made Russia nervous.
Right. A lot of Americans aren't aware that also countries like Kazakhstan and Tajikistan and South Ossetia and the Georgia, not the American state of Georgia, but the former Soviet Republic of Georgia, you know, Kyrgyzstan, you know, countries that most Americans have never even heard of have Partnership for Peace status, which means they're interim member, they're on the way to becoming members of NATO. You know, this thing with Ukraine, if we don't find a way of resolving it peacefully, you know, we're going to go through the same experience with each of these other countries that are part of the Soviet, used to be part of the Soviet Union, because Russia is going to not want any of them to be members of NATO. You know, and we shouldn't want them to be members of NATO either. Do we want to promise to go to nuclear war to protect the sovereignty of Kyrgyzstan?
Wow. So, Dr. Pry, if they want to get some of your books, they're at Amazon.com. Blackout Warfare is your most recent one, and it is a hardcover, excellent book, highly recommend it. And you, by the way, consulted with President Trump when he was running the first time on EMP, and with one of the first video he put out when he was president-elect, talking about his very first video as president-elect he put out, mentioning what he wanted to do in the first 100 days, included issues with EMP, and you had influenced him as a candidate, didn't you? You met with him.
Yes, I had the opportunity to give him a briefing for 45 minutes and when he was running for the presidency, and he said he wanted to know why the problem hadn't been solved already. Why hadn't the Department of Defense or the Department of Energy or the Department of Homeland Security taken the lead and protected the country from EMP? And I said, well, Mr. President, the problem is so big that none of those departments or agencies wants to take responsibility. They all say it's somebody else's job to do it. And he said, don't worry, Dr. Pry. When I'm elected, I'm going to knock their heads together and we'll solve this problem. And when he put out his executive order in 2019, that's in effect what he did. The executive order puts everybody on the hot seat. And I helped write that executive order, made contributions to it, as did other members of the EMP commission. So it was an excellent executive order. If only the U.S. government would implement it. You know, it's still there. The Biden administration, to its credit, hasn't canceled it. In fact, Biden has authorized proposed spending hundreds of millions of dollars to help implement it, and that's a good thing. You know, but what he has given with one hand, he more than takes away with his climate change policy. You know, he wants to spend hundreds of billions, you know, hundreds of millions on EMP protection and cyber protection, but hundreds of billions, if not trillions, on climate change. And the things he wants to do in climate change more than erase the good things that he has done in the EMP field. Mm. You know, what he wants to do by running the big grid off of solar panels and windmills and the like will destabilize the grid and make it more vulnerable to EMP and cyber. You know, and he wants to shut down coal and you know, hydro plants. You know, they're against nuclear power. These are the main sources of energy, and they are the most stable and most resilient forms of energy we have. But that's another conversation. You know, right now I'm just hoping that we can avoid getting nuked by Russia and have an opportunity to protect our grid in the future.
Dr. Peter Vincent-Pry, always an honor to have you with us. You're so knowledgeable. I hope people will check out your books, your many books at Amazon.com. Just type in Dr. Peter Vincent-Pry. You'll find his many, many books. His most recent one, Blackout Warfare. Dr. Pry, as always, thank you for being so generous with your time.
Well, thank you so much, Brannon. And in addition to buying my books, I would encourage people to buy food and water and start storing up food and water.
Wow. Well, I agree with that. I agree with that 100%. Thank you, Dr. Pry.
Thank you, Brannon.
Folks, again, I hope you'll visit Amazon.com and pick up his books. Support what he's doing. And that's partly how he does what he does. People buy his resources. You get good resources, and you're helping him continue to put out more resources. So please consider going to Amazon.com and buying a book or two. Give it to your friends, some of your elected officials, Dr. Peter Vincent-Pry. He did mention food. I just got another 4 pallets yesterday. As many of you know, I became a distributor of Mountain House Food, my company, my organization did, back in 2015. I mentioned on the air one day that that I had enough freeze-dried food for my family for many months, that I purchased it in 2013. And I mentioned this on the radio in 2015. Got bombarded with emails and text calls. My wife's like, what did you do? I'm like, why? What happened? I just got off the air. She said, we're just being flooded with people wanting to know what you bought, where you buy it, how did they get it? So we called up the company and said, hey, we want to be a distributor. I've been eating that food by Mountain House since I was in high school and canoe trips to the Boundary Waters in Canada. So I knew it was good, and I had been told by friends of mine in the military that it was a favorite of many Navy SEALs. So I called them and said, we want to be a distributor. I'll offer it to our audience, and it'll be used to help, you know, support what we do, our work and our programming. Like, great. So I filled out some paperwork, became a distributor. And we've been doing that. We were actually being mocked by some people, as I've told you before, on social media and whatnot for offering that in 2015. And then COVID happened in 2020. People stopped mocking because they realized how quick the grocery stores can go bare. So when Dr. Peter Vincent-Pry, a man with his expertise, says you better have food and water, he's absolutely right. And we're doing our very best to keep up with the orders because they're just flooding in and have been, well, now for almost 2 years. We got another 4 pallets, as I said yesterday. You can check out what we have to offer. We narrowed it down to 2 packs. We used to have a whole lot of options, but then as the supply kicked in, we had to narrow it down to 2 packs. We have a 14-day pack, an emergency supply pack. You'll find all the details at WVW. Logan, if you want to put up there, wvwtv.com/store. Just add /store to that. You'll find all the information there. wvwtv.com/store. wvwtv.com/store. I also meant to mention when I was talking with Kevin Freeman, I also meant to mention, he kept talking about precious metals, which I totally agree with. I meant to also mention one of the other sponsors I've worked with for years, for 15 years, is Swiss America. I've worked with them for many, many years as a sponsor, and I've done business with them, as have countless numbers of the people in my radio and TV audience. I think I've told you that at our conference this last fall, Wes Peters, who's a retired Marine, who's one of their lead guys, was sitting at our conference at the banquet on Thursday night, surrounded by a table full of people, many of them who were his clients. Well, that tells you a lot. They like this guy. They've done business with him. They're happy. And they were all sitting around the table. I stopped by and said hi to him and the folks at the table. I cannot tell you the hundreds of people that listen to my radio show, my national radio show on 60 stations, that have done business with Swiss America. Like I said, as have I. If you want to get a free packet, and that's all they're interested in, is educating you. They believe if you get educated, you'll make the right decision for yourself. There's no cookie cutter here because everybody's in a different situation. So you can't give financial advice and have it apply to everybody. I don't give financial advice, I give financial opinion. But if you want to get started, the key is education. Many Americans don't know the difference between bullion, like freshly minted U.S. silver eagles, gold eagles, or what is known as numismatic, 1933 and older. And there is privacy with that. By law, you have privacy. So when you talk about going to a digital currency and having something that's programmable, and they say, you've eaten your quota of meat for the month, and they shut you off, or, oh, by the way, oh, you're Brandon House? We're just going to shut you off completely, or we're going to shut you down so, you know, you can only have half of your assets available to you. Well, again, do you want to be under their thumb and in their system 100%? That's the beautiful thing about precious metals, but particularly numismatic, 1933 and older, okay, is by law, they're private. You can text him. You don't even have to call him. You can just simply text Wes Peters, give him your name and address, and say, hey, I want that free packet of information that Brandon was talking about. The number is 602-558-8585. 602-558-8585. You can call and leave a message, but you don't even have to do that. You can just text him. Say, here's my name and address, and I want that free packet of information. 602-558-8585. Let me show you something over at worldviewtimes.com again. This is my website, worldviewtimes.com. We spend a lot of time taking the transcripts from my nightly news show, and we bring those transcripts over here. So if you're watching my news show and you're like, wow, I want that stat, I want that figure, I like the hyperlink to what he just played, you can go to worldviewtimes.com and I put up the transcript to my news show every night right there for you to watch. Here's the article last night that we talked about with David Baldovin. So I want to make that point to you right there. Let me go to worldviewreport.com. This is, again, our aggregated news site. Here's a couple things you might want to take special notice of. All right. Julie Kelly discovers something damning while doing prep work in advance of verdict in the Whitmire, quote, kidnapping case. I highly recommend you read that article. Goes into great detail. Again, it's really showing us that, sadly, our FBI, as David Baldovin was saying last night, has been penetrated, and they're up to a lot of shenanigans, things you need to know about. Here's again another article. Programmable. Digital money is coming to control your life and steal your privacy. This is, again, a transcript from my news show, The Worldview Report. But again, it gives you a lot of information you need to know. So scrolling down the page, you'll find out a lot more about what's going on. Mississippi tightens up its elections with ban on sucker bucks. You want some good news tonight? Let me give you some good news. Here's some good news. In Wisconsin, they just signed legislation that passed the House and the Senate in Mississippi, passed the House and the Senate in Mississippi, signed on to by the governor of Mississippi, that bans any organization, including that of Mark Zuckerberg, from buying up elections and spending that millions and millions of dollars as he did around the country. About, what, $8 million to $10 million in Wisconsin alone? That is very good. Highly recommend you read that article. You'll also find that the court has reinstated Louisiana Attorney General's lawsuit against Zuckerberg. It had been tossed out. It's gotten reinstated. There's a lot of good news coming. Earlier tonight, I dealt with this letter that came out today. This is a letter from the Attorney General of Arizona. It is a 12-page letter. Lost my mic. Sorry. It's a 12-page letter that's come out from the Attorney General of Arizona today, 12 pages. And what he's doing in this 12 pages is validating much of what people like Mike Lindell, Attorney Kurt Olson, Justice Gableman, Mark Fincham, Representative from Wisconsin, who's running for Governor Timothy Rantham, has said, Dan Eastman, Attorney Dan Eastman. A lot of these people have been saying what this attorney general in Arizona is saying in these 12 pages when it comes to election fraud, election crimes. This is good news. A case being reinstated against the Zuckerberg group in Louisiana, that's good news. The governor of Mississippi signing a piece of legislation passed overwhelmingly by the House and the Senate in Mississippi to ban money from groups like Zuckerberg from buying our elections, that's good news. There's a lot of really positive things happening out there, folks. And so I want to give you some good news before we sign off for the evening. But I do want to warn you, we are watching what's going on with the lifting of Title 42. Title 42, what has kept the illegal immigrants out of our country due to COVID, put into place by Donald J. Trump. If that is indeed lifted, we have been warning you for weeks, and now the mainstream media has finally picked up on it, but we have been warning you for weeks what that would mean for our country. Up to 18,000 a day, and in 30 days, you're looking at about 540,000 illegal immigrants a month. Do that for several months, we got a real problem with housing, food, healthcare, education, crime. And we're going to see if any members of Congress can do anything to stop it. I know there right now there are some members of Congress threatening not to pass some key legislation the Biden administration wants if they indeed lift Title 42. So we are really on a razor's edge on so many issues as we have covered tonight. We're not here to discourage you or doom and gloom, but we are here to help you understand what's happening, to be sober-minded. That's very interesting. The Bible says we are to be sober-minded. You know what that means in the original language? Sensible. Be sensible. Dr. Pryor is talking about many of the people that are in the Biden regime. They're not sensible. They're really community organizers that have gone into the high places of our government that normally were reserved for very senior and seasoned men that served there no matter what administration was in power, because their ultimate goal was the protection of our nation. But instead, we've not put sensible people there. We put community organizers, many who hate our country, hate our military, hate our borders, hate our culture and our constitutional republic. Let's be sensible and realize the greatest threat, sadly, is coming from within, as Andrew Jackson warned. Thanks for watching. Take care.